You're going to get two sermons for the price of one today. I have a short supplemental teaching, and then you're going to hear from Phil as we begin our series in 2 Kings this morning. But I want to remind us all this morning that we are not here by choice. Not by our own choice, anyway. And you're probably thinking, well, that doesn't sound like a teaching we would hear from this pulpit. I have free will. I certainly am here by choice today. I agree that you are in this room by choice. You made a decision to be here. But what I mean is you are not on this planet by choice. Okay? You had nothing to do with being born. And you had nothing to do with being born in this country. In this century, and I guess the last century for many of us, but the time and the place of your birth, you had nothing to do with that. You had no say in it. Paul, when he was in Athens, you remember he went to Mars Hill and he was in the meeting of the Areopagus where all of the intellectuals came to share their philosophies with one another. And he's in that meeting. And here's what he said to the meeting of the Areopagus. He said, from one man, God made every nation of men. He's referring, obviously, to Adam. That they should inhabit the whole earth, and he, God, determined the times set for them and the exact places where they should live. God did this so that men would seek him, perhaps reach out for him and find him, though he is not far from each one of us. So why did God assign you to this country and this time in history? Have you ever wondered that? Was it to do evil in this time and place? Oh, certainly not. Why did God assign you to this time and this place? Was it to be passive and to watch other people act in history? Certainly not. Was it to do good? Was it to exert influence in this time and in this place? Was it to be salt and light? Yes, that's why you're here. That's why I'm here. What is unique about the time and the place to which you and I have been assigned? If you think about it, if you would have arrived in this country 1,000 years ago, it would have been very different. Or if you would have been born in the exact year that you were born, but born in another place. But what is unique about this time and this place in which we find ourselves? Well, without going into too much history, we should all understand that according to our Constitution, the country in which God assigned us is a representative republic. God assigned you and me not to a time and place in history in which an emperor or a king or a dictator rules with an iron fist and says, here's where you go, here's what you do, but to a time and a place in which our leaders actually answer to us. That's a concept that most people in history wouldn't even be able to relate to. A representative republic. We, the people, extend limited and temporary power to our leaders. Conditional power. Power that can be revoked by us. This is a rare and revolutionary concept. Do you understand that? It took a bloody revolution to install such a system of government here. A representative republic. And the question for the Christian in our day and age is, so what? What does this have to do with us? What does this have to do with living my day-to-day life faithfully honoring God? Does living out the Christian life impose any responsibilities on us as it pertains to civil government. You're all familiar with the parable of the talents. I want to just read part of that to you. Jesus taught, "Again, the kingdom of heaven will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted his property to them. To one he gave 5 talents of money, to another 2 talents, to another 1 talent, each according to his ability. Then he went on his journey. The man who had received 5 talents went at once and put his money to work and gained 5 more. So also the one who had 2 talents gained 2 more. But the man who had received the 1 talent went off, dug a hole in the ground, and hid his master's money. After a long time, the master of those servants returned and settled accounts with them." And I think you know how the story goes. So the man who had gained 5 more talents came to his master and said, "Here's what you entrusted with me to me, and I have 5 more for you. Well done, good and faithful servant." Same with the one who had 2 talents that he earned from the 2 talents entrusted to him. But the one who had hid the single talent in the ground came to him. He said, "Master, I knew you're a hard man, harvesting where you've not sown, gathering where you've not scattered seed. So I was afraid. I went out and hid your talent in the ground. See, here is what belongs to you." And his master replied, "What?" Oh, I understand. His master replied, "What? Oh, I wish you would have done better." Here's what his master called him: a wicked and lazy servant. God had entrusted to this man a talent, and he was responsible for investing that, and he didn't. And for that passivity, he was called a wicked and lazy servant. "So you knew that I harvest where I have not sown, gather where I have not scattered seed. Well then, you should have put my money on deposit with the bankers so that when I return, I would have received it back with interest." You know the rest of the story. "Depart from me." And really what this parable is doing is illustrating a general principle that Jesus taught elsewhere. He said, "From everyone who has been given much, much will be demanded. And from the one who has been entrusted with much, much more will be asked." As a United States citizen, have you been entrusted with much? Ask a boatload of Cubans braving the Atlantic Ocean on a cobbled-up raft. Ask them if they're fleeing Cuba because they didn't like the climate, or if they're fleeing because they didn't like the government, the dictator, the oppression. Have we been entrusted with much? Ask any of the hundreds of thousands, maybe millions of refugees who have fled to our shores in hopes, however dim the hope might have been, of escaping death and experiencing for themselves the blessing of self-government. Ask them. You know, the habit, I think, for all of us, I know certainly for myself, the habit is as we experience blessings in our life, whether that's a godly spouse or children who love us or a good job or a nice neighborhood, whatever it is, material, spiritual, whatever it is, the habit is the more we experience something, the more we seem to take it for granted as sinful people. I've talked to people who've grown up in other countries who haven't experienced the peace and prosperity and the freedom that we were born into. There are people from other countries who've migrated here who are actually warning us, "You're going to lose something here that is precious." It's easy to take those things for granted. Have we been entrusted with much beyond all doubt we have? And as with everything given to us, we are to steward this gift. the gift of self-government, the gift of a representative republic. We will be held responsible for what we do with it. You know, we've been studying the book of 1 Kings this morning. We're going to get into 2 Kings chapter 1. Phil is going to teach us there. And as you've surely noticed, God held these kings accountable. He had standards for them, and he judged them according to these standards, and they're actually recorded for us how they did. Did they lead the people to him? Did they secure justice? Did they use their power for good, or did they use their power for evil? The prophet Jeremiah was instructed by God during the reign of King Zedekiah to just march right into the palace and to deliver this message to King Zedekiah from God. Hear the word of the Lord, O King of Judah, you who sit on David's throne. You, your royal officials, and your people who come through these gates, this is what the Lord says. Do what is just and right. Rescue from the hand of the oppressor, the one who has been robbed. What was King Zedekiah to do with his power? Do what is right. Rescue those who are under oppression. Do no wrong or violence to the alien, the fatherless, or the widow. Do not shed innocent blood in this place. For if you are careful to carry out these commands, then kings who sit on David's throne will come through the gates of this palace, riding in chariots and on horses, accompanied by their officials and their people. But if you do not obey these commands, declares the Lord, I swear by myself that this palace will become a ruin, and indeed it did. God's standards for Judah's kings and for Israel's kings, they were to do good with their power. It isn't simply that they were to do no wrong. They were to do good, and they were to rescue those who were being oppressed. Surely, that's a standard that God only holds kings to, right? Or does he hold us accountable for the power that has been entrusted to us? Do you realize that we are, the rest of the world would look at us kind of like kings and queens? We get a say in our own government. We get a say in our own laws. We get a say in how things are run, whether the weak are trampled or whether the weak are oppressed or protected. We get a say in that. In a very loose sense, we are like kings and queens. Will God hold us accountable for how we use the power that he has entrusted to us? We've been assigned to a special place in time and in history and in this world. Does God have standards for us? Which leads me to this question, the question of voting. In 3 weeks and 2 days, we're going to have an opportunity to exert influence. If God held kings accountable to do good with the power entrusted to them, does he want us to vote? Does he want us to be involved in this question of who exerts power? We live in a day and an age, folks, when little children are butchered in the womb by law. What are we doing about it as God's people? And many other injustices. When I was in college, I worked construction, and that put me around a lot of Amish folks. I worked with Amish crews from time to time. And I had a good friend who was Amish, and we got to talking about this whole subject of voting. And his name was Mark. And I said, Mark, why don't you vote? And he said, I pray. Okay, so you pray, but you don't vote. Do you understand what praying is? Praying is not like some, like, just act that we do, like a magical thing that you get the answer, you pull the lever, and because you said it, then God does it. No, God acts on our prayers because we're appealing to him. because we really want what we're praying for, and He loves us as a Father, okay? So praying isn't just an act, and it's an expression of what we really, really want and really desire. And so if we say, God, give us godly leaders who will give, who will install justice, and then we're not willing to go out and vote, why would God answer that prayer? Seriously. And so I asked my friend, I said, Mark, I want you to imagine someday you're heading home and it's winter time and it's cold and you know, there's a blowing wind and sleet and it's just terrible conditions. And you pass your neighbor alongside of the road and his buggy is broken down and the wheel has fallen off and he's got his wife and his 14 kids there in the buggy. And I said, Mark, do you drive by and wave and say, we'll be praying for you? Well, no. What do? Well, I get him home. I help him. Okay. So you believe in praying and acting. You believe that faith without works is dead. But you're listening to someone who's telling you shouldn't vote. Here's where we apply the golden rule. You put yourself in the shoes of the unborn. And you ask. So this is hard to do because they're very small. But you ask, if I were in that position, weak, I have no voice, I entirely depend on the voice of others and the influence of others to bring me protection, would I want them to vote for people who would put good laws and who would pass good laws that would be just, that would give me protection? Put yourself in the place of the weak and the oppressed and apply the golden rule. This is life and death. It really, truly is. God help us. God help us if the salt of the earth and the light of the world, when given an opportunity to do good with what has been entrusted to us, God help us if we don't. God have mercy. You remember the story of Queen Esther. Right? The Jews are going to die. And Mordecai says, you need to go to the king, her husband. And she knew you don't actually just march right in there and talk to the king. He could actually put you to death. And Mordecai says, you got to do it. Uncle Mordecai said, for if you remain silent at this time, relief and deliverance for the Jews will arise from another place, but you and your father's family will perish. You're going to die. And who knows but that you have come to a royal position for such a time as this. In other words, this is no accident, Queen Esther. You've been assigned to this place of influence. And so you have a responsibility. And I would say to all of us, folks, we have a responsibility. We can't control the outcome of any election. All we can do is be faithful. We pray and then we act. Please be faithful to vote next week. Please follow the example of Queen Esther, who rose to the challenge that was ahead of her, and she did it risking her life. For us, it's not that way. Please vote.